Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Kate.
And Devin.
And this is something.
It's Med Crimes, Kate.
Oh, that's
Kate,
right.
Kate, it's Med Crimes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Here we are.
In our very favorite place to be, here in our pod lab.
Our pod lab.
We love it in here.
It's my favorite place.
It's a basement. It's cold. It's damp. There's probably mold.
With foot warmers.
We do have a heater, so it does make it just that much more homey.
I don't think we've ever had this description of a description of your basement before.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
I know that's what
I'm
you
sure
guys
this
want.
Is what everyone wants
it's
to
It's exactly
hear.
What they want, so don't even. Listen. We know that our audio has been like a little problematic, and we have a mysterious production assistant.
It was a mystery producer.
It
mystery
was.
Sound guy.
Mystery sound guy. Finally.
AKA, I can't tell you who it is.
That's what mystery means. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we can't tell you who it is, but he graciously finally isolated our very long-standing problem, and it ended up being one of my microphones, which I never suspected because my mics are brand new, and I thought that, like, because they're new, they can't possibly be the problem. But it turns out there were.
It was part of it.
It was part of it.
And then helped us play around with the new system.
Yes, he did. He fixed a lot of stuff for us. So thank you, mystery producer. We love you.
And he basically told me to not sit so close to you.
He did. Which, like, now we're far away from each other. And that is kind of sad. You can still reach me, though. So it's really fine. Devin, we have some Patreons.
We do have Patreons. Let's start with our latest Patreon, Rita Lee.
Rita Lee. Your name, when I read your name, I was like, ooh, that sounds like an old-timey movie star. Rita Lee.
Rita Lee.
I don't
know
why.
Are you a movie star? Are you an actress?
I hope she is. Good for her.
Old glamorous Hollywood.
I really hope that is exactly what she is. That would be great for her.
We also have Matthew Bailey.
Matthew Bailey, you're the man. Thank you, Mathley Bailey. Mathley?
Oh, wow. Are you a mathlete? Mathley?
Matthew Bailey, I am so sorry. Thank you so much for your contribution. And finally, we have Kayla Cooper.
Kayla Cooper.
Kayla Cooper. We love you guys. Thank you so much for your contributions. Thank you for joining our beautiful family of woodland creatures.
These woodland creatures and us are just really starting to grow.
I mean,
and
yeah.
We're becoming a family. And you get all the, I say all this, but you get some exclusive stuff and you get to support us. And hey, we found out it was Kate's microphone. And guess what?
Thanks
we bought
to a
our
new
Patreons,
one. So thank
upgrade,
you.
Trying to bring you a high quality content show.
Because we love you guys and we want to make sure that we give you, you know, the quality that you deserve.
Yes.
And we appreciate you guys.
We have some exciting stuff coming up that we hope to be able to share with you in a couple of weeks.
Yes, we do. Some stuff coming around the pike. We will be sharing more on our socials, I'm sure, very soon.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. All right. Y'all.
How's your week been?
Oh, my week?
Yeah.
It's been a little crazy as per usual. I'm glad that podcasting is like an audio thing and not more of a visual thing because, like, wow, my hair. Like my makeup free face. I'm a whole something. I've been working a big long stretch, so this has been a lot.
Hey, the fact that you're here.
Yep.
You're out of scrubs. And you know,
it's a miracle.
We were going to potentially record the other night and but you know, audio stuff and whatever took a little too long, and both of us, we were rocking the scrubs. It was just like, out of work, oh, let's go podcast.
I mean, yeah, that's exactly
what
happened. It was
that's
great.
What we do if we're not dealing with toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
We're at work,
which is always
I think I was trying to think the other day. So your son is almost four.
He is almost four.
So between our four children, their age doesn't even combine up to someone who would be able to drive.
What? That's
which is not... I don't know why I was thinking of this.
I don't know
either.
I was either.
Like, wow. I think it's a combined age in our children of 14.
Wow.
Yeah.
You added all that up all by yourself.
I'm
good
a freak.
Job.
I'm a freak.
Alrighty then.
What can I say? So, recap.
So, where we left off, Michael Swango had gone to medical school, barely squeaked by, and found himself in this surgical residency that he then got sort of pushed out of. He was working for an ambulance service, and he somehow thought that it would be like fine to poison his coworkers with arsenic.
I mean, trial and error, really.
Sure. I mean, and then of course he got caught because of
how
course
could,
he did.
I mean, how could you not?
I mean, how can you do that and not get caught?
When they all eat your food.
Yeah, and all get poisoned and all, you know that it's you. So he, of course, got caught and got convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison. And that is where we left off. And that is not the end of the story.
And then also what came out of that was a few. So we got a lot of Dunch vibes from this dude.
Yeah. And there's more.
And we also, there was the new term. They got swangoed.
There are more people that unfortunately get swangoed in this before it's done.
Well, I mean... And I was quite surprised when you told me we were going to have a two-parter and then we end with a conviction. And I'm like, nope.
Yeah, not the right conviction.
This is not the end.
Yeah.
So
without further ado. So Dr. Michael Swango had just been sentenced and is in prison now for 5 years for poisoning his coworkers on the ambulance service. Now, at the time, Ohio State University, which is the campus that he was working on, had their own police department. So there was like the OSU police department, and they often worked with, you know, the town's police department. And they were contacted once his arrest was made because of the allegations that something was happening at OSU in Rhodes Hall to patients that were dying suddenly. And they got wind that there was this whole big investigation into him because there was a lot of talk among nursing and his colleagues that, you know, he was somehow arbitrarily connected to almost all of these patient issues.
The lines are starting to come together.
They're coming together. So following Swango's arrest for and his charge was aggravated battery for poisoning people, since OSU's department was involved in the investigation, state and local authorities were given his personnel file, and his personnel file included some of the complaints from the nursing and all his overall poor performance and the reports of the suspicious behavior, like in detail. It also sort of outlined that time that he was accused, he was seen like maybe tampering with a central line, and then the patient coded right after that, right?
She was thinking that she should have seen blood if he was doing something, but everything was clear.
Exactly.
Yep.
So in total, he was associated with 5 suspicious deaths at OSU alone.
And this was in a short period of time.
Very. Yeah. This was less than a year. And these are the people that died, mind you, because there were times that he tried and did not succeed. Okay. And there were a lot of people that got very sick and almost died. Mm. And there were only 5 that died. So he's done this way more than any of us know, I think. Mm-hmm. So in turn, the investigation into the events at OSU was then like reopened. So the administration were like, okay, the police are getting involved. We're going to reopen all of this. Mm-hmm. And the police departments were surprised that they weren't made aware immediately when this happened. And like when there was that initial question of him tampering with IV lines, they were like, you know what? The eternal question.
What did
we
you
ask
do
this
about it? Why
every
didn't
single
you
podcast,
call us?
Every single episode we do is like, why didn't the hospital notify the authorities?
They're afraid to get sued.
They're what?
Afraid to get sued.
That's what I thought you said. Yeah, you're right.
You want me to say it one more time?
Yeah, please.
They don't want to get their asses sued.
That's exactly what it is, and it's so frustrating.
Common denominator,
because
anyone?
Because all of these things just get fucking buried forever.
Let's
and
cover it up.
These families, these patients and their families are just hidden from the truth, or if they know the truth, they're just buried and silenced. And it's just like so, ugh. It's gross. I hate it. There was one death that was of particular interest and concern. So Cynthia Ann McGee was a young gymnast from the University of Illinois, and she was admitted to Rhodes Hall after a ligament injury, which required surgery. And she was found by a nurse dead in her room.
Oh.
So she was found too late to be coded, and she was in her early 20s.
With a ligament.
With a ligament injury. Completely. I mean, anybody, you know, in their 60s, you know, maybe something like happened, you know, like you just never know. Sometimes, you know, heart attacks, strokes, that can be, you know, PEs, that can all be, you know.
Right.
You know, that's plausible.
Right.
With a 20-something-year-old gymnast there who is completely
healthy. A normal complication from gymnastry, from gymnastics.
Yes, exactly.
And now they're dead.
There is literally no explanation for that. For her to have developed some kind of life-threatening complication.
They didn't start looking into this situation until
so
now?
This was just one of the five really suspicious deaths there. So they are looking into it. And they did. This was part of that investigation the administration opened initially but couldn't prove anything. So they just, like, again, closed the investigation and buried it all. Because, I mean, why would you want to inform the authorities that somebody might be murdering people at your institution?
No.
No.
We don't need to
these fucking details.
Not necessary.
So the dean of OSU's law school kind of got involved, and he, like, reviewed the entire case because he's, like, you know, a super lawyer being the dean of a law school.
Yeah, you are.
And he concluded that administration should absolutely have involved the police right away, given the question of wrongdoing and actual harm by Swango.
You mean a lawyer wants someone to follow the law?
Yeah.
Wow.
In addition, the hospital failed to perform an M&M. Do you know what? Are you familiar with an M&M?
Yes.
So
I was in an M&M.
Yeah.
My case.
Right.
When I was pregnant.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall when they reviewed me.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For those of you who are not familiar, it stands
Kate's
for...
Kate's going to fill you in.
I am. I'm really good at that. So an M&M is a morbidity and mortality. And essentially, it's a meeting that's held with all of the people that were sort of in charge of or involved in a given patient's care. If some event happens that was unexpected, mm-hmm. or a death happens that was unexpected, mm-hmm. or there's something that it's sort of like a way to debrief, go through the case in detail, and discover if there's anything that could have been done better.
Right. It's in most cases a learning opportunity.
Of course.
Not meant to be punitive, but like, let's take a look at this. I mean, sometimes I would imagine in an M&M, if you're deep diving, you know, it could end up being punitive, right? I mean, depending on what they found. But usually it's let's talk about this as a team.
Well,
you know, did we miss something?
None of the five patients that died under suspicious circumstances and didn't have a great explanation for their deaths had an M&M. None of them.
Ugh.
Which
isn't that pretty? So, I mean,
standard.
Is that standard?
That's standard practice. At any time there's, you know, the hospital I work at, I've been invited to so many, I can't even possibly go to them at all. Not that, I mean, it's just standard practice. It's what you do if something happens and goes in a direction that's unexpected, or if a patient dies that was unexpected.
Oh, I would have loved
always
it if
because,
you went to mine.
Is it always?
I want to know what they would have had to say.
But it's not always because because the hospital did something wrong.
No,
review the details so that we can make sure that we did everything right. And if there's a process that needs to be improved, we're going to work to identify that.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of Q&I.
I remember there was a midwife after my case because, you know, something happened to me at the end of my pregnancy. But and she kept saying, you know, you always rule out obstetrics. and then and to see if there's that complication. And then you think of med-surg things, you know, and my problem ended up being a med-surg. So then it was like, well, we're going to bring this to our M&M to see if there was a med-surg symptom, diagnosis, what have you.
Right.
I always wanted to be the fly on that wall.
Well, it's interesting, right? I would want to be, too. It's very interesting.
But none of those cases went.
None. Not one.
Interest. Oh. Well,
and all of them were like,
I want to say interesting, but no, really, that's just bizarre.
It's bizarre and it's sad.
So how does a case get to an M&M?
So,
like, who has to bring it up to
anybody
bring it to
can
that?
Say, hey, can we M&M? Anybody involved in the care can be like, I think that we should do an M&M meeting on this person.
Okay.
And they make it happen.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's sort of the basis. And none of these patients had that, which is just astounding. And
I'm surprised none of the nurses or anybody like spoke up, especially of that 26-year-old.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the nursing staff at the time. And there's some more info about that, too.
Okay.
So OSU's police department launched their own internal investigation into the staff's claims, and they started by planting fiber optic cameras like around the nursing units.
What? Can they do that?
Apparently they can.
Did they know they were there?
No. Well, what? I can't imagine that they did with what they caught on these cameras. I can't imagine that the staff did not know.
Okay, tell.
So
what'd they find?
They found some stuff.
Oh gosh.
So they did this internal investigation. They planted these fiber optic cameras, like they planted them on the units, in the drug closets, like in all of the spaces on the nursing units, right? They got a lot more than they bargained for. And what they found were that multiple staff members were injecting themselves with drugs.
What?
Obtained from the unit.
No.
Staff members were like coming in inebriated and like taking drugs and then like passing out, or just like taking drugs and continuing to like be a nurse.
What?
Oh yeah.
This happened in what period? What years? what time frame was this whole case?
This is in the 80s.
What?
Yeah. All the staff. So Swango's attorneys then loved that information, because then they argued that the staff's accounts were not reliable,
right,
and that their problem was obviously much more widespread than Swango, which, like, I can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. It was very widespread, if that's indeed what was going on. My God. So prosecutors in Franklin County considered bringing charges of murder or attempted murder up against Swango. However, they did not, because they didn't have the proof. It was all circumstantial. As per, like, the exact same song and dance that we sing every time we do this.
We should actually make a song and dance for every time we get into an episode
where we get to
this
part.
Like, I need a bell when we come to this moment, and you just ring it.
I love that idea.
Ding, 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 ding.
Devin's going to bring a bell next
time. Maybe it should be a cowbell.
It should be. We got to have more cowbell. So away he goes to prison, right? So this is all, you know, transpiring when he's on his way into prison. So he goes to prison for 5 years. His medical licenses in Illinois and Ohio were both revoked. And this got a lot of media attention, like right off the bat. And essentially that meant that his career, if he didn't turn things around, was like effectively over. And he begins this campaign from prison to like revamp his reputation a little bit. And he agrees to
how do you do that from inside prison?
Great question.
Let me fix my reputation when I'm locked away.
Well, he's trying. He's not necessarily succeeding, but he's trying. And one thing that he agreed to do was to participate in this interview on ABC's program 2020.
Okay.
And this program aired February 13th of 1986, and that was his second year in prison. So this program airs. He's calm. He's neatly dressed. He's like in a suit and tie. And he was interviewed by host Hugh Downs. And during the program, he was adamant that he had been wrongfully accused. And he began by saying, quote, first of all, I'm innocent, end quote.
First of all, that's what they always say.
That's a true story. And he continued by saying, quote, I could never have done any of the things that they're saying that I would have allegedly done. I think my whole life speaks for that. Everything I've done in the past, my work, both as a paramedic and a physician, and I simply could not have done these things, end quote.
Did they have the patient that he may drive themselves to the ER with a heart attack, like, speak on this 2020 episode two?
I mean, because that would have been key.
I mean, hello.
But I don't, if they did, they did, it was not mentioned.
Just saying.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When your team's curious and ready to grow, they do their best work, and that changes everything. At CBT Nuggets, we've spent over 25 years making IT training engaging, hands-on, and fun. Expert-led courses, virtual labs, real-world skills your team can use right now. From networking to cloud to cybersecurity, we build skills and confidence that drive results. Believe in your team. Give them the tools to thrive at cbtnuggets.com/solutions.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
By the way, I'm getting all of this awesome research from this book that I read, and I mentioned in the first episode that I like read this book and I kept it like a mystery because I kept saying I gotta look at this other page and tell you exactly what the title of the book is and shout out the actual book, but then like I never did. So sorry for keeping that like a wicked mystery from you guys. But
so we're just keeping it going.
It's just a quietly a book that I read. So the book is called Blind Eye. It's by James B. Stewart, and he's actually a native of Swango's hometown of Quincy, Illinois. And I highly, highly, highly recommend you read this. It is so detailed. There's interviews like with Swango and a lot of his colleagues. And if you want to hear some more detail or read some more detail about more of the patients and more stories about the particular patients,
like
read
more
this
than what we're going to cover.
Yeah, more than we're going to cover. I wish I could cover every single person in a 2-part podcast, but I can't. So just so you know, Blind Eye, James B. Stewart, wonderful book. Go read it.
Do it.
Do it. So he was specifically asked about the IV line at OSU. So remember there was a time where a woman coded after, and then afterwards she said, I remember a doctor coming into my room and putting something in my IV line, and that's the last thing I remember. He was asked specifically about that incident. Excuse me. And his response was, quote, I deny any criminal behavior or any violation of the Hippocratic Oath in working in Ohio or working anywhere, end quote. Which is like a very cookie cutter response.
No
almost
kidding.
Almost as if he planned it.
It's almost as if it was written for him.
Yeah, exactly. So later that year, he was released from prison after only serving 2 of his 5 years. And he was placed on probation for a year after his release. So he's out and about after 2 years.
Is his reputation fixed? Or so he thinks?
Oh, God, no. He's good. Everything's a mess still.
Good.
Yeah. So he at the time was dating Rita Dumas, and she was a nurse who worked at OSU. And prior to his arrest, they like sort of started dating, and they weren't initially like crazy serious prior to the arrest, but she like was committed and stuck by him like through everything. She just like stayed with him like through the prosecution, through jail.
Why?
I don't know. Now they got pretty serious like once he was in prison. Like, don't ask me why, but they did. And they
because that's a great way for relationships to progress.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
are you allowed conjugal visits if you're not married?
Well, I think it depends on like the level of prison that you're in. I have no idea.
Okay.
With what they did, but now. They got pretty serious. They started talking about getting married when he got out, and she wanted to get him back on his feet. My assumption, and based on what I know about the course of this relationship, is more that he kind of wanted to have someone who was like securely on his side on the outside to help him once mm-hmm. he got out, because he knew that he would have no career, no money, nowhere to live, and he was going to need someone.
Using her.
Basically, mm-hmm. yeah. In 1988, he and Rita leave Illinois and move to Newport News, Virginia, in hopes of starting anew.
And let's start again.
Starting anew. He applies for his license in Virginia to practice medicine. However, he was declined in light of the fact that he has a felony conviction. And
You can't do that.
And then he eventually found work as a counselor at a career development center, which specialized in helping students on the path to medical professions or medical school.
He can do that? They didn't require background checks for that job?
Stay tuned.
Okay.
While working at this center, a mysterious illness infiltrated the center.
Oh, come on.
Three colleagues came down with strange symptoms all at the exact same time. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, chills, etc.
What's going on?
One woman needed to be hospitalized because she
probably
was so
dehydration.
Sick. Yes.
Yeah.
So colleagues knew who this guy was and knew why he went to jail and were like, so
you got anything
you're poisoning
to do with
us? Like, they were all very suspicious, given his past, rightfully.
That was dumb.
Of course. Right? Like, how?
Switch it up.
What are you doing? Switch it up.
Just saying.
So, yeah. I mean, switch it up would be smart. But this guy, I think he just literally cannot stop himself. He's got this sick fascination
with
for
sick
causing
people?
Harm to people and watching them suffer and die. And it's like, if his life is finally moving in like an okay direction, he's got
to
just
poison people.
Got to poison people or do mm-hmm. something to make it interesting for himself again. So everybody gets sick, right? Everybody's suspicious given his past, and they couldn't prove anything, but after that one event, no other sicknesses occurred. I think maybe he was just like, "Whoop! Everybody got suspicious. I can't play around with these
kind
people and treat
off
them like
on
lab
the
rats
today."
Yeah, exactly. So he did display some weird behavior. Like, we know that Swango's friggin' weird everywhere that he goes, right? He had this like obsession with violent death, and he like talked about it all the time, and it was all obvious there. He was caught working on his crazy ass scrapbooks there. Cutting
still?
Out articles. Oh, this Again? Man and his crazy. I'm like, mm-hmm, yeah. So he's still.
And Rita's still just sticking around like, yeah. Hey, let me help you glue your scrapbook together.
Well, that hold
sounds
on.
Sounds like a good date
yeah,
night.
We'll talk about Rita in a second. She's kind of like in the dark and like kind of stupidly in the dark, but we're going to talk about that. So he's working on these scrapbooks at this counseling center, like trimming like articles out and pasting them in. And eventually it was discovered that he had converted the basement of the facility into like a secret living quarters. And he
what?
Was just like sleeping there. He was like spending a lot of nights there.
Did you think nobody was going to find him?
Right. And I'm like, dude, don't you like have a girlfriend? Like, don't you want to like go home and sleep in a bed? Like, what are you doing?
I'm just going to go hop in the basement where I work.
What is happening? So really, really weird, right? So everybody found that, and his supervisor was like, dude, this is we can't handle this level of weirdness, and he was asked to resign in May of 1989.
Now he lost his job and his little home.
I know. His little nook. He had a nook.
Yeah, he had a nook.
Yeah, his nook is gone. So A complaint was filed regarding the illnesses at the office, though, because people were still suspicious that he did that. And that this was with the Newport News police, that somebody actually went to the police and were like, hey, just so you know, like, we all got sick. We're pretty sure this guy poisoned us and he's got a record. Can you check that out? And so the police department actually, they were like on it. They opened an investigation. They even called Ohio and Illinois state police to share their reports and like get the reports back and forth. So, of course, due to lack of evidence, nothing could be done.
I need another bell for that one.
Yep, bell. Ding, ding. So, lack of evidence. And the entire issue, however, prompted Swango to legally change his name. Because he's like, if I'm ever going to move on from this, I can't be associated with my last name.
I can't
name.
Billy 00 Swango anymore.
He can't, no. Because Swango is now synonymous with like
with
a
poisoning
guy
people.
Who fucking poisons people. Like a crazy person. So... he decided, like, okay, this
what
is going to fix everything. I'm going to change my name and that's going to fix everything.
What did he pick?
He changed his legal name in January 1990 to David Jackson Adams. And around the same time, he and Rita got married after dating for 6 years.
Really, Rita?
Yeah, Rita.
Rita.
So after this, he found work as a lab technician at a company he worked for. The company he worked for was called... Atticole, and his supervisor there described him as like pleasant, hardworking, reliable, and he never had any issues. So
I'm gonna assume back in the 90s then. So he changed his name, but for licensing and whatever else, no fingerprints are needed?
That's a great question. I'm not sure.
Because we all still have to go through that for licensing now.
Oh, yeah.
Things
I'm assuming were a lot more lackadaisical.
Yeah. I mean, right? I just know it's the 90s, so we're talking 30 years ago, which sounds really weird to say.
God.
But, yeah.
Can't with that.
So it's long ago, but not that long ago.
He was working as a lab technician. His co-workers all said he was pleasant, hardworking, so he flipped some kind of internal switch that made him acceptable to normal society.
David Adams is a good guy.
Well, with a name like David Adams, you just can't go wrong.
I mean, you got a name like David, and it's just, you're a gem.
I mean, yeah.
It's a thing.
Shortly after their wedding, Rita reports she soon realized that she made a terrible mistake.
No kidding.
So... initially, and like while they were dating and through prison and all up until the wedding, he was so devoted to her. He was affectionate. He did everything for her. He was like a little lapdog, followed her around, like loved her, was obviously.
But now he's got a new name, new job,
and he's married
good
to her.
Reputation.
Yeah. So he's married to her. He feels like I locked that down. And she said it was like a switch flipped. And suddenly he was cold. He barely spoke to her. He wouldn't even sleep in the same room as her. Like, he was spending nights, you know, at
his
old
nook.
Job in his fucking
in
nook.
In a new nook.
And he wasn't even, like, sleeping at home. So she also noticed that money from their joint account would, like, go missing.
Oh.
And he would never had a good like, explanation for
her. Trigger number one.
Yeah, so money is disappearing. This is not good. So the breaking point, though, was when... a woman approached her, and this woman was a clerk at a local video rental store, and she said, hey, I'm really sorry to have to give you this news, but I've been sleeping with your husband, and I'm pregnant.
Stop it!
So...
what?
She claimed to be pregnant with
the Blockbuster
baby.
Lady?
Blockbuster? I don't know if it was Blockbuster.
I mean, that was around in the 90s.
Yes, it was. It could have been Blockbuster. And,
Blockbuster baby.
When she said this, Rita believed her because she had her suspicions for like before. She's like, I think he's been cheating before. And so then in January 1991, after only 6 months of being married, she filed for divorce.
That was
6 months.
Not even a year.
Very fast. Yeah.
Yeah, that really was a flip.
So as the marriage like unraveled.
I mean, I'd like to say you go, girl, but you should have gotten a long time
ago. No, I feel bad for her. I think that he's very manipulative. He obviously is a great talker. He's talked his way out of situations.
So this was the new modern term of gaslighting.
Yeah, basically. So, and I think she was, you know, kind of a victim. I think she was naive, for sure. And she could have made better decisions. And
well,
she
I'm
got
glad she
way
came to the
head.
Light.
She's very lucky that
she
came
out
unharmed, because we're going to talk about some other stuff.
Oh, boy.
So as this marriage, like, unraveled, his behavior at his new employer, which had previously, you know, been fine, became less stable. He started doing his weird shit. He started doing his scrapbooks, talking about death, and just being overall just a weirdo. So suddenly his co-workers at this company all became violently ill while he watched on with glee.
Where's my cowbell?
You need a cowbell. Ding. One executive at this company actually had to be hospitalized and nearly died. He was in a coma. The guy is out of control.
There's no way to initially connect, right? Because they think this is David Adams.
Yeah, exactly.
And so how long did it take to figure out that it was him?
So they didn't. Again, they couldn't prove it.
Right.
What he did decide to do, though, was he's like, I got to keep moving. I got to keep moving on. I can't stay in the same place. If I'm going to, you know, if I'm going to keep poisoning people, I got to just mobile. I can't stay in one place.
I got to find new people.
I got to find new people to poison. So
if I ain't going to switch it up.
Exactly. So he decided to move on from there, and he wanted to try again to find work as a physician. And he inquired about this opening at Ohio Valley Medical Center in Wheeland, West Virginia. So during the interview process, he did reveal his actual name, and he had to for record purposes.
I was
going to
say, how did David Adams go to med school?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So he did have to. He did have to do that. Now, at this time, there was no National Practitioner Data Bank, and we learned about the National Practitioner Data Bank when we talked about Christopher Dunch.
Right.
This is a sort of computerized database of problem prescribers or problem
sketchy
doctors, physicians, APRNs, PAs, anybody who prescribes and has patients. So this is a bank that can be physically searched. If an entity is looking to hire a provider, they can search on this data bank and ensure that their prospective employee does not appear here for having problem
XYZ.
XYZ, exactly right.
And so that didn't exist at this point.
That did not exist. So he interviewed with this guy, Dr.
I guess this is another reason why it now exists.
Yes, exactly right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about it because it sort of launches in the middle of all of this.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So, but it doesn't help us any.
No. So, bummer.
He's interviewed with Dr. Jeffrey Schultz, who's the chief of medicine at OVMC. Now, Swango lied, of course, because he's so into doing that, telling Dr. Schultz that his battery charge stemmed from a single altercation at a restaurant. And he revealed nothing about the poisoning, nothing about what actually went down with the poisoning, and he revealed nothing about what went down at OSU in that entire investigation into him. So this is a problem. Now, Schultz cross-checked everything, though, and when he called to verify that what Swango said was true about his conviction and his loss of medical license, he found out about the poisonings of the ambulance crew members and that the restaurant thing was a complete lie. He found out that whole thing.
Good job for Schultz for doing his checks.
So he was given the opportunity, though, to provide paperwork that supported his side of the events, and he provided a forged fact sheet regarding his conviction and the time he served. So
why though? Like, I don't even
because he really wanted to get a job, and he's just trying to fake his way.
No, I know,
into
but
it.
Why? My question was, why would Schultz even give him that chance? Like, right? He doesn't have to.
No, he doesn't have to.
Right.
Maybe they were hard up. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Or maybe that's just procedure. Like, maybe that's just like, this is what I have been made aware of.
Because in my end, it's like, if you didn't disclose it, now your chance is lost.
Yeah.
If you at least disclose it, then we can talk.
I agree.
Then, or at least the door's open.
Like, if you're lying right off the bat, like, I kind of don't want you to work for me.
Right.
You know?
Don't hide something.
That's shitty. I don't want that. So, there's another hospital, an admin at this other hospital called Sanford USD Medical Center in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, did not check as thoroughly. Swango issued a letter within his application, which stated, I have somewhat of a complicated situation, end quote, and cited a, quote, personal tragedy, end quote, that led to his criminal charges in 1986.
Sure.
And he gave some forged legal documents, which is a big no-no. You can't do that. So they held a meeting with Swango, and the administration he met with recount that he was poised, charismatic, super persuasive, and he laid out this whole sob story about his charges, like, I mean, beautifully, extremely convincing. So he matched to the University of South Dakota's internal medicine residency program in March of 1992.
Really?
Really.
So now he's a doctor again.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun.
Yep.
That's bullshit. I'm just going to say, come on.
I know it.
Come on.
I know. So
he has the conviction.
Mm-hmm.
He lied about it.
Sure did.
He forged documents.
Yeah.
And now he's got a job.
Yep. I know. The wow. Look Devin's giving me is another stinky eyeball.
That HR rep must be like, what are you doing?
Exactly. So
we don't want to get sued.
And to support his case, he even forged a letter from the Virginia governor at the time,
Gerald Beliles.
And I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Gerald Beliles, I think, is what it is. So this letter that he forged that was from, what he tried to make it seem like it was from the Virginia governor at the time. It falsely called for the reinstatement of Swango's medical license based on the fact that he had led a, quote, exemplary lifestyle, end quote, and had committed no further crimes.
Right.
Right. So during this time, he took an ACLS class, which is Advanced Cardiovascular Life Support. Mm-hmm. And if you're not in the medical field, it's something, some certification that you have to have, especially if you work in like an acute care setting.
It's basically like you have BLS, which is basic CPR certification. CPR. Mm-hmm. And then this is a step above that.
Right.
Learning the medications to give.
Exactly right. So he had to take his ACLS certification class at a local hospital where he met a nurse. And he recalls that she was one of the most beautiful creatures that he had ever seen. She had long strawberry blonde hair and she was just had these like beautiful blue eyes. And he just like. Immediately, it was like love at first sight for him.
Did he just see like the glow around her?
Yeah. Oh! I mean, yeah. And there was like a song that played when she walked down the hall.
I bet.
Her name was Kristen Kinney. And they chatted a lot during the class where she revealed that she was already engaged to a resident who was doing his residency at the hospital. And at the end of the class, he completed a survey for ACLS. You know how with the American Heart Association, you have to like do the survey at the end. And he had written in the survey that the best thing about the class was Kristen.
Oh, Kristen.
So cheesy. Oh, my God.
Wow.
So the two kept in touch and eventually
check yes or no, like leave it on in the box.
Yeah.
Do you want to be my friend?
Yes or no. Yeah, exactly. So the two kept in touch and eventually she did actually break off her engagement with her fiance and started dating Swango. Yeah.
Bad choice, Kristen.
I know. So once he secured his residency at USD, he proposed to Kristen and they got engaged. Prior to him beginning his residency there, administrators at USD were in final review of his file when they realized that Swango had given them a certificate of completion of an internship from OSU, but they hadn't received one directly from Ohio State. So they sent this inquiry and were met with a bunch of legal barriers and red tape since a bunch of Swango stuff had been buried following that investigation for fear of lawsuits. So because they just couldn't get through that, he was hired. They just decided to like drop it and not look into it further.
We can't validate your records, but just come along
anyway. No, I mean, it should be fine.
No big deal.
It tracks. So around this time is when the National Practitioner Data Bank was being launched, but this is not a retroactive program.
Right.
So
it's just starting fresh.
None of Swango's bullshit from years ago is going to make it into
this. So he's
like
grandfathered out of it.
Exactly. Pretty much. Yeah.
So but anything he does from here on out would be in it.
Exactly right. So it had no info on Swango at the time. So he went on to earn a glowing reputation at USD in Sioux Falls. It's so interesting with this guy how he can just like turn it on and turn it off.
He's a bullshitter.
He really is. Like he'll just like when he gets exhausted from bullshitting, he'll just be like, oh, I'm tired. I'm going to start being fucking weird again.
Where's my arsenic?
Where's my scrapbooks? This is how some people can just like, I think that's like literally the mark of like a sociopath where you can just like turn it on and blend in with society. And then, you know, when you just don't give a fuck anymore, you just be your weird ass self. I mean, hey, I'm okay with being weird. Like, you know, lean into that shit. You be you. But, like,
Not like that.
Maybe don't poison people. I don't. That's not a good look on anybody. So he actually did really well at Sioux Falls, and he got certified as an ACLS instructor. And so he was starting to teach ACLS classes. And co-workers said that he was even teaching things to the more experienced residents at the times. He was super sharp. He learned really quickly. And he developed a reputation for doing really well in emergencies. Almost like he does really well because
thank you. Oh, you finished my sentence.
Well, when you spend this much time together, you start doing that. So he was doing excellent there in the eyes of his supervisors. And things went so great that he got a little too cocky. And he applied for a membership with the American Medical Association using his real name and address. And he had been using his real name and address, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like, he had been using that. But with the American Medical Association, their officials are a little bit more in-depth, apparently, than USD Sioux Falls administration when he was applying for the job.
Oh, boy.
So the official in charge of membership for him was Nancy Watson. And she did note that in his personnel file that he admitted to having a criminal charge in his history. So she wrote to the courthouse directly in Quincy, Illinois, to get a copy of his charges. And it was then that everything started to really fall apart. So the request to the courthouse prompted the judge that presided over his conviction to pick up the phone and call Watson directly. His name was Judge Cashman, and he was shocked to learn that this guy was still practicing medicine. He was like,
how did this happen?
Do you know who this guy is and what he did?
Right. He's like, how? I put this guy behind bars.
Yes, exactly. How is this happening? So Cashman told the investigator, Watson told her everything. Mm-hmm. And so the American Medical Association official then called Swango to be like, yeah,
sorry, dude,
this is going to have to go to the board for further review. I can't approve this application.
But she could deny.
Yeah. So
without board. Right.
So he then like panicked. He's like, oh, fuck, they're going to check up on me. Like, they're actually going to look into shit.
Time to move.
Time to do. So he immediately was like, ooh, I withdraw my application. Actually, you can stop Forget processing that. But, and she was like, okay. And like, in his mind, he was trying to prevent any further like probing, but everyone at the AMA already knew his secret. And eventually this got back to the dean of the University of South Dakota, and then came to light the suspicious deaths at Ohio State University in that entire investigation. Okay. And he was quickly forced to resign from his residency at USD. So he gets pushed out of there. Now, as all of this came to light,
like, I feel like, again, he's stupid, so he doesn't know, but, like,
yeah,
you got lucky. You got in a residency.
He is insanely lucky that he's walking among people.
Like, let's not push it.
Yeah, dude.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. So, as all of this comes to light, Kristen is, like, you know, gaining all of this new knowledge, right? Because there was some more action in the media. You know, there was like headlines that said like local doctor accused of poisoning, and she knew
gets medical license back,
right? She knew about this prior charge, but Swango had convinced her that it was all a big mistake and didn't actually poison anyone. So
of course
she didn't know anything about the investigation and the suspicious deaths at OSU. That was new information for her. So she like, nevertheless, friends stated that she, you know, when she was asked about it, she trusted her gut. You know, she said that, I trust my gut. I know he's a good person. He's a good guy. Like, I don't believe any of this bullshit. So that following year, a friend of Kristen's got a concerning phone call from her. Her voice was like scratchy and she was kind of upset, like she had been crying. Uh-oh. And she said that she was cleaning and dusting in their home. And when she was dusting a picture frame around Michael's med school diploma, this card fell out from behind the picture.
Oh my God, I'm intrigued.
And it appeared to have some kind of recipe for like a poisonous compound on it. It was like a recipe card for like a poison. Devin's fucking smile right now, you guys, is fucking creepy.
Like, why? I'm just saying, like,
she's the fucking face she just
I made. Almost picture like when you're in like an escape room, and then all of a sudden you just come across the clue.
That's exactly what that was.
Right?
It just like fell.
That's what
her
I'm
feet.
Like thinking.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what that was. So this card falls, and she's like, "This is poison on this," and so
wow.
This so, you know, apparently Michael, when she got home, she asked him about it, and he ends up explaining it away. He said, "This belonged to my father."
Oh, come on.
So it, for me, I'm like, that's not a good end. Like, why does your father then have a fucking right. card of poison? Like,
yeah.
I want to know.
Uh-huh.
Like, what's happening? Anyway, he explained his way out of it somehow. I don't know exactly how.
Tell me she didn't believe him.
So she did. And after this, she began suffering from severe migraines. Almost every day, she would have a violent migraine with nausea.
What's he doing to her?
I know. Isn't that so awful?
What's he doing to her?
Well, hold on. So her parents knew who Swangle was and were following what was going on in the media. So they knew that he had this history. You know, she had called them a couple of times being like upset. And so they were really worried about this whole relationship, like really mm-hmm. concerned. So they were not a huge fan of Michael and were like really hoping that the relationship would like end. So they visited her and noticed that she like looked awful. Like she wasn't eating. She was nauseous all the time. She was headachy. And they were really, really worried. Eventually, they talked her into coming back home to Virginia to
Good.
Live with them because
okay.
she just was not feeling well. So she left Michael. She said the relationship didn't end 100%. They were still, like, in touch, but she was not living with him anymore. So that's a step in the right direction.
So she goes home. I'm assuming she's thriving, feeling
yes.
much better. And
she does.
Ugh,
yeah.
I'm
so
me.
She. So as soon as she left Michael, she never had another headache.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So there's that.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Now, meanwhile, the American Medical Association temporarily loses track of Swango, and he manages to, like, worm his way somehow into a psychiatry residency at Stony Brook University of New York, SUNY.
He should be a patient, not a resident.
Can we get this guy a room?
Yes!
Can we literally get him a room? Put him
in two. Tranquilize him, put him in a bed, strap him down.
Put this guy in two. So They relied on his documentation he provided and did not call any judicial entities to confirm his criminal history. They didn't contact the federal or state medical boards. The chief of medicine there called one or two of his residents references and like was satisfied and called it a day. He's like, yep, this guy checks out. So
I don't get it. How many places because this guy hopped to and they all say, oh yeah, sure.
I know it. I think about like the hiring process that I went through when I was onboarded as a provider, and it was so extensive. I was like, I know that I don't have a criminal history, but I was like, what if they find something? What if they find out about the time I got a speeding ticket? Like, am I going to not get this job? They just looked into me so
really intensely. And I feel like that's what it should be.
That's
right?
Exactly
like,
what
that's
it should be.
That's how it should be if you're going to hire someone who prescribes medications and life-saving treatments.
Exactly. Hospitals take on all this liability when they hire a provider. And it's like, you gotta check this shit out, man. You got to. So he's...
Well, maybe they've learned their mistakes over the last 30 years.
Yeah, I think they have. And this is exactly why. Because
the HR people and all the other bosses have a picture of Swango up there.
Exactly. So his first rotation was internal medicine at the VA Medical Center in Northport, New York. Now, here, his patients were, again, dying for no reason. Like, very quickly dying for no reason. So, once, one of his first patients at the VA, his name was Dominic Buffalino. He was a World War II veteran.
Oh.
I know. He was admitted for an upper respiratory infection, for which he was requiring some oxygen, so he had to be hospitalized. Now, his wife was with him at the time, and in the hospital, as she was, like, with him all the time in the hospital, because the two were, like, inseparable. Okay? Teresa was his wife's name, and she recounts that this young resident entered the room and introduced himself as Dr. Swango, and that he would be assuming care of him from now on. He was pleasant, he was reassuring. The next morning, Teresa was at home getting ready to visit her husband for the day, and she gets this call from Dr. Swango that her husband had passed unexpectedly. Now, this was obviously a shock, and she was devastated and screaming and crying on the phone. And she recalls that Michael said to her, "Don't hang up. Stay on the phone with me. Talk to me."
What?
It was like he wanted to, like, listen
hear her
to
grief?
Her anguish.
Psycho.
In that moment.
What a psycho.
Like, I want to
I caused this and I want to enjoy every second of it.
It's like he was relishing that moment that he was telling a woman who was married to this man for most of her life that were inseparable and so in love that he's dead. And he wanted to just soak up that moment. That is so evil. That is so evil.
Bastard.
Honestly. So back to Kristen. So a few months after Kristen left Michael, you know, she was doing okay at home, but she and Michael were still talking. She is having some mental health issues, right? Her parents were still pretty concerned about her. She was writing Michael a lot of letters. She was journaling a lot. Eventually, she stopped going to work because she couldn't function well. And 3 months after Kristen left Michael and moved back home, she committed suicide. An autopsy was performed at her parents' request because they were convinced that while she was living with them, he had given her something, and they found arsenic present in her hair and in her system.
It stays in your system that long.
For years it can stay in your hair. It grows out.
Right.
Follow it and they can time the whole timeline by your hair with heavy metals like arsenic and some other heavy metals.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
Wow.
That is sad.
Wow.
Oh, God, it kills me. It's just so sad. So Kristen's mom, Sharon, called Swango to give him the news that Kristen had died. And remember, I mean, these two were going to get married. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were supposedly in love. And Michael supposedly loved her.
Was his response just like, thanks?
He replied, "I'm sorry. When's the funeral?"
Wow.
That's literally it. She said his tone was just frighteningly flat.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's the kind of guy this is.
He's a great man.
Now, oh, I know. So there were, aside from this incident with Mr. Buffalino, there were multiple other incidents that were similar at SUNY. Now, Baron Harris was admitted for pneumonia. He was a 60-year-old, otherwise healthy guy. Dr. Swango introduced himself as Dr. Michael Kirk when he saw him.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe just to, you know, I don't know. I was thinking that maybe in case he survived and the guy gave an account, he would say this Dr. Kirk came in and then everyone would have no idea that it was, which is the stupidest way to try to cover your tracks. Stupid.
They'll obviously be like, there's no Dr. Kirk on staff.
And Swango was on staff, so it must have been Swango. Mystery solved. We didn't even need to call Scooby-Doo.
Done. No need for Scooby.
Nope. So he introduced himself as Dr. Michael Kirk, and Mr. Harris found him to be attentive, reassuring, and, you know, just a great doctor. Now, on a subsequent visit the following day, Mrs. Harris, Baron's wife, walks into the room to find, quote, Dr. Kirk at her husband's bedside, giving him an injection into his IV. She asked what this is, and he replied, it's just vitamins. And he removed
through your IV.
Yeah. And he removed the syringe and left the room. And I mean, you do give some vitamins can
I
be
know,
given IV.
But, you know, and when you say it's just vitamins, that makes you think of like a Flintstone pill.
Well, that's
that's why I'm like,
I know.
That's why I made that comment.
I know. So he removed the syringe and he left the room. And when the nurse came back in, his wife mentioned that Dr. Kirk was just in here and he gave my husband an injection in his IV. And the nurse said to her, oh, you must be mistaken. Only nurses give injections. Doctors don't. Mm-hmm. Don't give injections. So right after this happened, Harris becomes heavily sedated and he declined steadily within days and days later was in a coma on a ventilator. And Swango eventually convinced his wife to make him a DNR and take him off life support, citing that he was convinced that he had, quote, irreparable brain damage, end quote, and that he would never come off the ventilator.
Oh my gosh.
So Sharon, Kristen's mom, gets wind of the autopsy results for her daughter, meanwhile.
She's flying off the handle.
She is obviously devastated and immediately knew that Swango was poisoning her daughter and believes wholeheartedly that it led to her suicide, which I'm sure she's right. And she was also very dismayed that Michael had gone on to continue practicing medicine after all of this. And after all of that negative media coverage, after everything, he was still a doctor. Uh-huh. Why is this guy still doing this? Now, she picks up the phone. She's like, I'm making some fucking calls. I got to figure this out.
Girl.
This girl. So
she called 2020?
Yeah, she should have. I hope she did. Now, she picks up the phone. She notifies administration of at USD of his whereabouts, whom in turn directly called his chief of medicine at SUNY. And that when SUNY was made aware of who Swango was and what had happened and that he had lied, he was questioned by the board there and finally admitted that he was convicted of poisoning and asked to resign. So there goes another residency.
Does that get in the database?
No, he did not get reported to the databank because apparently when you're a resident and not technically an independently practicing physician at the time, it is against the bylaws of the thing. So you don't get put in the databank if you're only a resident. It's only for fully licensed practitioners.
That's not cool.
I know.
Is it still that way?
I don't know if it's still that way, but that's how it was at this point. SUNY administrators that hired him were also asked to resign because they vetted him so poorly. And obviously he like murdered some patients because these people don't know how to onboard people. Now, before they resigned, though, they sent out a warning about Swango to all 125 medical schools and 1,000 teaching hospitals in the United States, effectively blacklisting him from obtaining any medical residency within the U.S.
They
said,
if I'm losing my job, this guy's going down.
Fuck this guy. You're going down. Since this took place at a VA, this was a federal facility. The FBI was involved.
Yeah, it was.
So they looked for him
And we're love seeking, when shit starts to go down.
Yeah. Oh, this is when shit really falls apart. So they start looking for him and they're seeking to press charges because these legal documents were federal documents. These were legal documents that he falsified. So right there, even though they can't get, they can't necessarily get him for murder,
for the murders,
they could get him for falsifying these documents. That they know he did. So they issue a warrant charging him for using fraudulent credentials to gain entry to VA Affairs hospitals. Now,
that just sounds frightening in itself.
I know.
When you say it like that.
I know. So Swango immediately drops out of sight. He's out of sight. He goes into hiding at this point until mid-1994 when he surfaces again. So this is when the FBI receives a tip that he's living in Atlanta and working as a chemist at a wastewater facility. And to get this job, apparently he had lied on his job application and made it reflect that he had studied chemistry in graduate school and he used his fake name.
So he's back to David Adams.
Yeah, David Adams. So as soon as the FBI gets wind, they notified the company he worked for, who he really was, and what he was suspected of doing of all these hospitals. And he was immediately fired for lying on his application. And he flees the country. He's gone. He's like, shit. Like,
yep,
they're closing
in on me. Gotta go farther than
at
the South.
So in November 1994, later in that year, a small hospital called Manene Lutheran Mission Hospital in Zimbabwe receives an application for what appeared to be a prominent American neurosurgeon.
Stop.
He gave them his actual name, and the medical director there recalled that this very good-looking, charismatic, athletic, intelligent young American doctor was resettling in Zimbabwe when he could be working in the United States earning millions of dollars a year. And he asked Swango, why would you want to come to work here when you could be working in America earning millions of dollars? And Swango told him, because I want to be where I can really make a difference in people's lives.
Fuck you, dude.
I know. That's what I said.
You know, so this guy's clearly fleeing from the FBI.
Oh, yeah.
But yet he's still doing jobs
that
are going to trace him back.
Yeah. Like, Please tell me
Zimbabwe has to check him out, right? They still have those laws.
This is an entirely different country. They have no access to anything that happened in the United States.
Yeah, they have no access to anything, but that doesn't mean they don't ask for it, right?
I mean, they could have Googled him, I guess.
Did we have Google in 94?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
They could have.
I was
right.
Seven.
I don't know. That's right. This is 1994. I don't know what happens in 1994. I don't know. So anyway, he's in Zimbabwe. They have no idea what he's doing or what's going on. They just don't know. Soon after he starts, patients begin mysteriously dying left and right with alarming frequency. Even young, healthy patients, much like exactly when went on in the States. So the medical director there, Dr. Zashiri, and I'm so sorry if I'm not pronouncing that right, Zashiri, I think is what it is, was immediately suspicious of Swango because none of this happened until he showed up. And he was immediately suspicious and cited disturbing behavior there, like his normal weird self behavior. He was doing that too. So Swango was terminated. But because at the time they were unable to perform autopsies on these patients that included toxicology testing, no proof was able to be found. Mm-hmm. So at this time, Swango rented a room in Bulawayo. I am so sorry again with the pronunciation. Bulawayo, I think
you
is what it is.
You don't speak Zimbabwean,
I do not.
You?
So he was renting a room in Bulawayo from a widowed woman.
It's his new nook.
Yeah, this is the new nook. And she, at one time, became violently sick after she ate a meal that she had prepared for herself. And the woman consulted this local surgeon named Michael Cotton, who suspected arsenic poisoning because of her presentation and persuaded her to send hair samples for forensic analysis in a lab in Pretoria, South Africa. Now, these clippings confirmed toxic levels of arsenic in her hair.
Wow.
So somebody had given her arsenic.
To the little widow.
Yeah. So nobody else but Swango could have put something in her food.
To everybody that's giving him a little shred of kindness.
Yeah.
I'm going to poison you.
Yeah. He just, anybody who is within reach, he's going to poison. So nobody else but Swango could have put something in her food. So the lab reports were passed on to the Zimbabwe Republic Police Criminal Investigation Department, or CID. And through Interpol, they were passed to the FBI. And the FBI were like, yes, he's in Zimbabwe. We can go get him. So they subsequently visited Zimbabwe to interview Cotton and the pathologist in Bulawayo. And the pathologist's name was Stanford Math. Now, at this point, though, Swango had sensed that the FBI had found him. And, of course, he dips again. So he crosses the border into Zambia. And then he spent some time in Namibia. This guy's all over the place. He's like, using all sorts of fake
names.
You
start hopping to these countries, you know you're losing.
He's
not winning.
Things are spiraling out of control if you're needing to relocate countries, like, on the regular. Don't do that. Like,
pick a new country every week.
Clean your shit up if you're doing that. So he's inventing all these new names. He's using, you know, forging documents left and right. He's applying for medical work, any medical work, like nursing, phlebotomy, like, you know, anything that could possibly get him in the medical field. That's what he's wanting to do. So charges were brought against Swango in Zimbabwe around this time. He was charged with poisoning 7 patients, 5 of whom actually died. Even though they couldn't do the autopsies to confirm it, they had enough circumstantial evidence. And, you know, now that the FBI was involved and connecting the dots, they were like, there's no way he didn't poison these people.
Right.
Like, there's
exactly.
no way. So a search warrant was executed for his residence in Zimbabwe, this little room he was staying in, and investigators found multiple partially used vials and boxes of multiple different chemicals, including adrenaline, epinephrine, Valium, lidocaine, succinylcholine,
oh my God,
potassium chloride, arsenic, and many, many, many others, all of which, of course, are fatal if given in mass quantities.
He's just traveling around with his little briefcase of chemicals.
Yeah, basically. So meanwhile, a bunch of work is being done by the FBI. Now, while they couldn't necessarily prove that he was poisoning people right away, they knew what he was doing, and they knew that he had to be stopped. They knew that no matter where he was going, he was just going to keep fucking putting shit in people's food, and keep, if he couldn't be around patients, he was just going to poison food.
The poor widow.
I know, exactly. So they knew he had to be stopped, and they knew what he was doing. So they were able to make this profile and really focus on the fact that he had lied on his government applications for DEA registration. Now, when you're a prescriber, you register with the DEA so that you can prescribe narcotics, and they can kind of track your prescription and your habits. And, you know, that way a red flag will go off if somebody's prescribing disproportionate amount. So he lied on all of those forms as well, of course, because he lied all the time. So, and he lied all those federal forms too for the VA. So that was enough for immigration to nab him while he was on a layover that he had in Chicago. Yeah. He was on his way to Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
And finally they got him and arrested him on those charges when he was on his layover in Chicago. This was finally happening in June of 1977. So,
1997? Okay, I thought I heard.
Sorry, what did I say? 77?
Yeah, I think you were on a roll. I was like back in time. So he went on for 3 years, traveling the globe of dodging them.
Yeah. So at this point, the FBI, the DEA, and the Veterans Affairs Office, and prosecutors from Ohio, New York, and Illinois all knew this guy was a rampant serial killer, but that it would be really tough to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. But they knew that he would kill again en masse given the opportunity. So they charged him for fraudulence and for all the fraudulent like documentation and for lying to the DEA. They charged him for all of that.
Good.
And he went to court. He was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Now, this was buying them time to build their murder case.
That's not enough, but that's just where they're starting.
This is just like, let's get him
behind bars, stop prescribing.
Yes, let's get him put away now because he's dangerous so that we can build this murder case and put him away forever. So they put together this massive collection of all of his crimes. And as part of this, 3 bodies were exhumed for toxicology testing.
No way.
Yeah, so tissue samples, hair samples were all sent to a lab in Long Island.
I
want to
know how they
testing.
Chose the 3.
Well, I think they narrowed it down to the 3 most likely.
Right, the three most obvious
that he really had to have done. So
Among
those was Dominic Bufalino, the guy that was murdered and his poor wife was hysterical. So He was the one that died suddenly after being admitted for upper respiratory infection. So toxicology testing identified massive amounts of nicotine in his body.
What?
He didn't smoke. This was at a level that would have been consistent with nicotine poisoning.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just stopped his heart. Whoa. And he died.
Yeah.
So,
jeez.
Various other poisonous compounds were found on the other two as well. Now, finally, in July of 2000, less than a week before he was due to be released from prison on the fraud charge, federal prosecutors on Long Island filed a criminal complaint charging Swango with 3 counts of murder, 1 count of assault, and 1 count each of false statements, mail fraud, and conspiracy to commit wire fraud.
Oh,
so
that sounds like a lot.
It was, and for good thing it was.
No, now, I'm saying like a lot in like a good way, a lot of time behind bars.
A week before the indictment was handed up, FBI agents interviewed Swango in prison, and they told him that on the day he was due to be released, he would be extradited to Zimbabwe to face charges of murder and attempted murder there. And knowing that if he went to Zimbabwe, he was going to face the death penalty for his crimes and be killed. So knowing that, he began talks for a plea agreement, of course.
Okay.
So eventually,
so now he's chickening out and like confessing to stuff to stay in America?
Which is fine, because as long as he gets put behind bars and the death penalty is off the table, at least it gives these families some answers as far as what happens.
I just meant in his way, he's like scared enough where he's
That's the thing. He doesn't want to die. Right. Yeah. He doesn't want to face the death penalty.
He doesn't want to die.
No, he doesn't. He wants to make other people die.
Yeah. He doesn't want his
God forbid anybody give him a lethal injection. Well, he's been doing that for years.
I was going to say, God forbid, I mean, he was the last page of his scrapbook.
Yeah. How many people? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, that was a good one, Devin.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So eventually prosecutors agree then to take the death penalty and the extradition off the table in return for Swango accepting a sentence of life in prison without parole and telling them about some more crimes that he committed. Now, Swango was formally indicted on July 17th, 2000, and he pled not guilty. And on September 6th, he pled guilty to 3 murder counts, as well as counts of wire fraud and mail fraud before Judge Jacob Mishler. At his sentencing hearing, Swango admitted to causing the 3 murders and lying about his role in causing a 4th death and lying about his 1985 conviction. And while he never really admitted to killing anybody else, he did admit to and talk a little bit about what he did to other people when he almost killed them.
Only a little bit.
Yeah, only a little bit. Just he wouldn't give away all of the stuff, you know. During sentencing, prosecutors read aloud some passages that were found in his scrapbooks and journals, and they described the joy he felt during his crimes, the rush, the sense of control, and that it was virtually all he thought about. Which psycho. Tracks. That makes perfect sense based on his MO. I mean, it really does. Now, in total, circumstantial evidence links Swango to about 35 suspicious deaths. And Jesus. He also poisoned, I mean, countless others who did survive.
That did survive, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So Swango is currently serving 3 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole at ADX Florence in Florence, Colorado. He is not allowed to prepare or come in contact with any food that will be fed to others.
So he's not working in the kitchen in jail.
No, he will never be working in the kitchen in jail.
No.
And that is the bonkers tale of Dr. Michael 00 Swango, the serial killer poisoner from Quincy, Illinois.
That was a doozy.
Wasn't it, though?
Wow.
I mean, really?
That was the first one, I think, with them going at their colleagues.
Right?
Right?
Yeah, I think that was the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, send us your thoughts, folks. Leave us some reviews.
Yeah, we want ratings, reviews, if you guys like. Like, please, just, if you haven't rated us already, just shoot us a little rating or a little review.
We like to hear what you have to say.
We do. We want to. We take it all very seriously, and we look at everything that comes through. So write us messages, engage with us on social media. We reply to literally everything, so go for it.
I know. We had someone the other day that you sent me that said there's probably the slim chance that you're actually going to see this.
Oh, my God,
this.
And that was like, girl, like, I'm like girl, sitting here. I read everything.
We see everything.
I know. We love you, by the way. You know
yes.
who you are. So if you would like to find us on social media, you can... Uh-oh, I lost my little
post-it. We lost the postie, so we're going to try this from memory.
Okay, well...
Search for us on Facebook at MedCrimes Podcast.
You can send us a Twitter at MedCrimes PC.
Search us on Instagram at MedCrimes Podcast.
Or if you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/MedCrimes Podcast. And also... If you have a crazy medical story that's like funny or spooky or scary, or if you just want to send us a message to say hi, you can email us at medcrimes@gmail.com.
We've started to get a few emails.
Yeah, we've had a few, and we want to put together this like compilation, like story episode of all your crazy,
yeah,
cool
science
stories.
Yeah, it doesn't have
stories.
To be like a med crime story. Like,
no.
Just tell us some of your funny things that happened during your shift.
You know that
or, like,
shit
the
that
weird
you just
ass
nobody,
things.
Like the shit that nobody can make up. That's what we want to hear.
Yes.
We want to hear about that.
And I know we got them because in my field of the long-term care,
so
we
many.
Always say you can't make the shit up. Like, we always say
I
we
say
want to write
at
a
least
book
weekly.
Somewhere.
So
those stories are out there.
I know you guys have stories. We want to hear them, and maybe you'll make it onto an episode. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening.
Thanks
Until
for listening.
Next time.
Keep it cool.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.